Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Robert Jensen, a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He's the author of Writing Dissent, Taking Radical Ideas from the Margins to the Mainstream, and Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Jensen.
Good to be with you, Ian.
Thank you, Robert. And there's very little constructive dialogue going on in the country. We are polarized and living in alternative universes. There's the universe that thinks Donald Trump is a catastrophe and is dangerous. And every day, more and more stories come out indicating that that looks like it really is the case. And yet, his supporters out there think he's doing a great job, think he's honest and trustworthy, think he will fulfill his campaign promises, and that they believe that the mainstream press prints fake news. And so how can we straddle this divide? At what point do you think, if indeed Trump were to be impeached, surely you'd have a revolution in this country, because his supporters would think that that was a coup by the liberal elite, surely?
Well, I'm not so sure it would be that dire if things came to that. But let's go back and take some of the points you made. The country's polarized. That's true. It's not unique. There have been periods where there was incredible political polarization in this country. Go back to the immediate aftermath of the founding and the separation and the Federalists and the Jeffersonians. A lot of fake news, a lot of created, manufactured stories in the press. Of course, the big difference is there is the United States was not the world's superpower. And so the consequences of it were not quite so dire. The other big change from previous periods, of course, is we're now on the precipice of something like a complete ecological collapse that's unfolding. So I think what's different today is not that people get a little crazy, that people support candidates irrationally. That happens on all sides and happens throughout history. It's the stakes that are different, and of course the nature of mass communication that accelerates this. We don't have time for the kinds of checks on insanity that seem to be part of history. So there's a lot of reasons to be concerned today. What about those supporters of Donald Trump who seem immune to factual assertions and some sort of rational assessment of the facts? Okay, I see that all the time. I see it in students here at the University of Texas. I see it in some members of my own family. That's also not unique to Trump. A lot of irrational attachment to politicians on all sides. But I really am not sure that the commitment people have to Trump would lead them to the streets if the workings of, let's say, the justice system, whether it's impeachment or investigations through traditional law enforcement agencies, if they do come up with evidence of criminal activity by Trump, I'm not so sure the country's, you know, going to be awash in blood in the streets. A lot of people who like to bark about how much they love Trump really, I don't think, believe he is honest and trustworthy. I think they're just angry at a centrist and liberal establishment that has largely ignored them. And that assessment is absolutely true. The centrist and liberal establishment has largely ignored ordinary people in this country. That's what we on the left have been saying for a long time.
But when you mentioned the dire situation vis-a-vis global warming and the fact that that the planet itself is in danger, then how do you deal with the fact that Donald Trump is actually making it even more dangerous? He's rolling back what tentative and inadequate steps have been taken to address this danger. So in that context, what he's doing is the reckless endangerment of the planet. So can you afford the luxury of basically wishing for a dialogue with the very people who are enabling the destruction of all of us? In other words, we're all in lifeboat Earth together, but there are a bunch of people in our lifeboat that are drilling holes in the bottom of the lifeboat.
Right, and here I think the news is bad on all fronts. So, you know, I've long said there's two kinds of climate change deniers in the United States. One group is housed mainly in the Republican Party, and they deny the science. The other group is housed mainly in the Democratic Party, and they deny the implications of the science. So it's true enough that if we proceed on a course charted by people like Donald Trump and James Inhofe, the main climate denier in Congress, people like my own representative here in Texas, Lamar Smith, another big climate denier, that's going to accelerate the rate of destruction and bring us closer to that edge of the cliff sooner. But let's face it, the Democratic Party has not offered any meaningful response to climate change itself. We have to, as a society, deal with the reality, which is we're going to have to put a cap on carbon. And no one in the Democratic Party is going to argue for that, because that means talking about the end of a belief in economic growth that can go on forever. All of these things are should be front and center in our political dialogue, and none of them are. So, you know, you can make an argument that just as dangerous to the planet as Donald Trump is Al Gore, a former vice president who runs around the country telling us all that if we just all adopt solar energy, we're going to save ourselves. And what Al Gore and that wing of the Democratic Party is unwilling to admit is that we're looking at a radical shift in the way we live. To quote one writer, we all are stuck in living arrangements that have no future. Okay, so all of this should be on the table. Now, I'm not really equating Donald Trump and Al Gore. I think they're both dangerous political figures, but one is far more dangerous. And the consequences in the short term of Donald Trump are, of course, far more dire. To go back to your point, how do you make a move toward reasoned dialogue with people who are committed to a kind of unreasoned engagement? And it may be that this just has to run its course, and we have to wait for elections to at least put back into power the less crazy wing of the American establishment, that is the Democratic Party. You've got basically a crazy political establishment, the borderline lunatic Republican Party and the only, you know, slightly deranged Democratic Party. Okay, that's what we're dealing with. It's not a pretty picture, but at least I think we should acknowledge that's where we sit.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Jensen, a professor at the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin, and the author of Writing Dissent, Taking Radical Ideas from the Margins to the Mainstream and Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. So there you are in a red state, the reddest of red states. You basically, the state's being run by a right-wing talk show host. who's, you know, by the way, Mike Pence was a right-wing talk show host too, and he may end up running the country. But the point I wanted to make was that Austin is a kind of little blue island in a red state. Is there the effect of this little island of reason and rationality in that state being able to reach out to the rest of the state? Is there any kind of transaction there? Is it, in other words, can people talk across the fence to their neighbors and say, well, you know, you may be getting all your information from Fox News and Sinclair and mega churches, but, you know, there's this other alternative news here as well.
Yeah. So. Well, here, you know, again, I don't have a lot of sunny good news to offer you. In California, it may seem like Texas is crazy, and the reason it does is because Texas is crazy. So this, as you pointed out, the one of the most powerful political figures in the state right now is the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, who is a former right-wing talk show host and the leader of the Tea Party wing of the Republicans. Here, basically, we have a Republican Party split between the moderate Republicans in today's world, which means reactionary right-wing business people, who want to continue to keep Texas basically a third world country in some ways, incredible concentration of wealth at the top, and basically a internal third world, a population that has very little access to services. And then you've got the Tea Party crowd that wants basically the same thing, but has a ideological fanaticism attached to it that's a little more dangerous in a lot of ways. That's the state. Now, I get students at the University of Texas from all over the state who come with various backgrounds, and over the course of time, when they're exposed to a variety of opinions, you can see some of them start to change. They shift from the ideology they brought in. It doesn't mean they all become, you know, leftist revolutionaries. It means that they're open to that critical engagement. The problem, of course, is that takes place over years with the resources of a university in play. When Austin goes out to try to affect the politics of Texas, it essentially is rejected, no matter what the issue, on the assumption that Austin is, you know, a communist redoubt. So it takes a simple thing. Austin City Council passed a ban on single-use plastic bags, which is very good for ecosystems, you know, less plastic floating around in all sorts of places. The state legislature overrides these kinds of local initiatives, even when they're very thoughtful, essentially reversing the general conservative notion that government should take place at the lowest possible level. That's a standard conservative talking point. You want the people at the local level to govern. Well, that's always the case unless the city of Austin is doing something progressive, in which case the state legislature overrides it with a statewide law. We saw that on the plastic bag ban. We saw it on attempts by Austin to regulate Uber and Lyft the same way that we regulate taxi cabs, a very sensible project, which is going to be overridden at the state level. The city of Denton, another kind of liberal redoubt up in North Texas, passed a ban on fracking. That was overridden by the state. So the state of Texas is now completely dominated not only by Republicans, but by reactionary Republicans. There is not a single statewide office held by a Democrat at this point. It's a grim story here, and, you know, we can hope that Texas is not going to be the model for the entire United States. Clearly, that's not the case. But there's a lot of disturbing aspects to the politics here, and Austin apparently has no impact on trying to deepen the dialogue.
So today, Trump at the Coast Guard Academy basically blamed all of his problems on the press and on, an unseen, unstated kind of, deep state force out there that's out to do him in doing his presidency. And he called upon his people to rally behind him and that he was not going to quit and he was going to fight all the way. So he obviously feels besieged. They don't believe anything that's going on. They don't believe Comey. They don't believe all of this stuff that is the headlines now in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. It's as though none of that counts. You know, you've got Fox, you've got Alex Jones. Fox's headlines are about some young guy that worked for the DNC who was murdered, and they're trying to say that the Clintons murdered him, just like going back to Vince Foster. That's a headline. At the moment when you've got all the, everybody in a lather over the Comey memo, that's what Fox is putting out. So you're not giving us the sense that there's anything that's going to bridge the gap there.
I, quite frankly, in the short term, I don't see anything that can. Let's talk about journalism a bit, because there's been a consistent left critique of the corporatization of journalism, of the way that journalism, especially on economic and foreign affairs, tends to follow elite opinion. There's a lot of very good analysis of the problem of mainstream journalism from the left. But now we're dealing with a situation where mainstream journalism, which is part of a democratic society and whatever its flaws is important, is under a more consistent and sustained assault from the right, which is, to me, very dangerous. So I think, first of all, those of us on the left have to both hold this notion that there are problems with the model of mainstream journalism in the U.S. I've been a critic for most of my adult life, but also recognize we need to support mainstream journalism because it is part of a democratic society. So that said, because mainstream journalism is not often spoken to ordinary people in this country and spoken to their interests, there was a whole component of the American population ready to abandon it completely. Fox pioneered the model to do it. Online websites like Drudge continued to push it. We're again stuck in a place that is not the product of the last election. It's the product of decades of an atrophying of democracy. It's kind of ironic that the post-World War II era, which saw the United States rise to unparalleled prominence in the world, also in a lot of ways sowed the seeds of the erosion of democracy. If we could go back and shift the way the American press developed in the 20th century to more of a European model, if we could go back and actually create meaningful public media back in the early years of television, you can go back and see all sorts of things that would have produced a journalism, in this case, that would have been more supportive of democracy, and now we're stuck. You know, there are a lot of these questions where it would be nice to say, well, here's the solution, but the problems are rooted in decades, sometimes centuries, of, you know, systems of concentrated power that are not going to be shifted soon. And unfortunately, I don't think either of the major political forces, the Democrats or the Republicans, really have the capacity to deal with this. Even the so-called left edge of the Democratic Party, somebody like Bernie Sanders, doesn't seem to be able to formulate the new kind of vision. At best, on the left edge of the Democrats, we say a kind of holding action to try and restore basically New Deal politics, far superior to the politics we're dealing with today, of course. But I think it's time for some really new thinking, and part of that just means recognizing that we are in a hole that is so deep that digging out of it, you know, really isn't perhaps the goal. We have to figure out how to live in the hole. It's a bit of a tortured metaphor, I admit, right. But that may be what we're dealing with these days.
Well, just in the last minute then, so it makes more sense, in effect, to fight the good fight against. And it's worth noting that the person who's really done more damage to the American media than any other single human being on the face of the earth, and it includes damage to the entire global media, is the person that Donald Trump speaks to more often than anybody else every day, and that is Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox. So those two are tied at the hip. So we're better off not thinking that we can reach across and convince people to think Trump is doing a great job. What we have to do is do what we can to stop these two, right? Trump and Murdoch. Is that
right? If we were going to reduce politics to bumper stickers, there are two goals. One is to stop the worst of the assault on basic freedoms and the stability of the United States. The second is to not recover some old vision of the world, but start to build a new one, the kind of thing that can be attractive to people, that will get people excited. And that's a project we need to, that it's about creation. It's not about returning. It's about something new. And I think that's where the real energy is going to have to be put.
Well, Robert Jensen, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Always great to be with you, Ethan. Ian, thanks.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Robert Jensen, a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He is the author of Writing Dissent, Taking Radical Ideas from the Margins to the Mainstream, and Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. I'm